This is FBG Jen
and FBG Kristen.
And I'm FBG Margot, host and producer. You're listening to the podcast that will help you keep a lid on the junk in the trunk and inspire you to live a happy and confident life.
Each episode, we chat with motivational experts and celebs and share our own candid adventures in being healthy.
If you're looking for a podcast that's equal parts hilarious and enlightening, well, then welcome to the Fit Bottoms Girls podcast.
Welcome back to the Fit Bottom Girls podcast. This is FBG Margot, and today on the line we have Jen.
Hey, guys.
And we have a newbie. It's FBG Allison. Allison, say hi to everyone.
Hi, everyone.
So Allison is on today's interview. It's with Sage Roundtree, and we're really excited. It's a great interview. She's an intelligent lady. She's thoughtful. She's spiritual. But we wanted to talk a bit more about the 1440 Multiversity because, Jen, you and Kristen are going to be a part of it. So is Sage. So is Jessamine, by the way, a previous guest on the show. So can you talk a little bit about Multiversity? 1440
yeah.
Multiversity. Excuse me.
Yeah, so 1440 Multiversity is this brand new complex that's out near Santa Cruz. It's gorgeous. It's in the California Redwoods. They're building it. They brought in like all these cool experts. And I don't exactly know, like somehow Kristen and I are in the midst of, you know, people like Sage Roundtree and like Rodney Yee and like all these other crazy awesome experts doing our thing. But I know in this interview, you guys got to talk to Sage a little bit about her programs on yoga. What Kristen and I are doing, we're calling it basically the Fit Bottom Girls Retreat for readers so that you can experience a happy fit you. And we're basically taking all the life lessons that we've learned, everything we've learned running the sites on what we know works when it comes to being truly healthy and happy inside and out. And we put them into a couple day program that's August 11th through the 13th. It's a Friday through a Sunday. So it's two nights and you can go come, you can fly out with a friend, you can bunk together. I think you can be partnered with someone to stay with. You can have your own suite. Like the accommodations really vary as to kind of what kind of experience you want to have. Basically, this is going to be a two-day immersion workshop that's led by Kristen and I. And no matter if you like have pounds you want to lose or you just want to redefine your relationship with food, set some healthy habits, stop yo-yo dieting because it sucks, handle emotional eating, like we're going to get into all of that in a small group format that's going to be, you know, really tailored to you since no one-size-fits-all approach works. We'll be helping you to figure out, like, what really does work for you and setting goals for yourself and then kind of showing you some cool tricks and tips, and we'll work out and we'll probably hike and just have fun together and maybe make friendships for a lifetime. And I know that Allison was actually in on Sage's program, which she's got. I'll give you the official names and the dates so that we have them here in the episode. But Sage is at 1440 Multiversity is doing Yoga for Athletes, Balance, Strength, Flexibility, and Focus, which is June 16th through the 18th. And then after that, Teaching Yoga to Athletes, an intensive for teachers, trainers, and coaches, which will actually be that Sunday through Friday, which is June 18th through the 23rd. And what's cool is that Allison went through this program at a different facility with Sage. So I would just, I guess, I know Margo and I would love to hear like what your experience with Sage was and what those trainings were like.
Yeah, so I had the privilege of doing both the Yoga for Athletes and the Teaching Yoga for Athletes in January of this year, 2017. And it was sort of like looking for different trainings in those areas. And I don't even know how it ended up happening, but I ended up on a website that was talking about Sage's programs coming up. And I know Sage's reputation and I've read her work and I just find everything she has to say to be incredibly fascinating. And it was, like, for a moment, I kind of was like, I don't know that I can afford these trainings, but I just knew I had to go for it. And I was so incredibly glad that I did. I went up to Massachusetts in the wintertime and started with the 3-day. And this one was geared more for just athletes. It was learning how yoga can complement your training and not be an extension of it so that you can sort of fit yoga into any training schedule or any type of sports schedule without worrying about it causing you injury, which is something that a lot of athletes have this fear of, because when they think of yoga, they think of, you know, the hot vinyasa, a lot of movement, and they start to feel that it would erode or compromise their ability to train fully. So the 3-day was super awesome because it really taught you how to use yoga in a more strategic and smart way so that it doesn't become an extension of your training. It becomes this great complement that helps teach you how you can become stronger and more balanced and more flexible and more mentally resilient in your sport. So it was super cool to spend that time with her. We had several different sessions with her, a little bit of lecture and then in a lot of movement. And each session of the movement was geared towards a specific aspect of how yoga can be used in an athlete's training schedule. So either, you know, for the strength and conditioning piece, or for balance, and that could be like physical balance so that you don't fall over, or for people that are involved in contact sports, how to make a more resilient body by creating better balance, but also how to create balance between muscles that are used a ton in your sport and some that are not used so much so that you don't get injured. And then, you know, working with breath and meditation on that mental aspect, which is super critical for those of us that spend any time competing or putting a little bit of pressure on ourselves to train for something, because, you know, like the anxiety, the nerves, and just stress in general really can affect the performance and our confidence as we approach our sport. And that was awesome. That was sort of like my own personal retreat that first 3 days, because I got to just be an athlete. I got to go in and I got somebody to tell me what to do and, you know, to give me a little bit of love in Shavasana. It was awesome. I really, really appreciated that time. And then I got as the trainings were switching, so as we were moving out of Yoga for Athletes and into teaching Yoga for Athletes, there was a half a day break. And I was the only one that was staying for both sessions, but both Sage and I had to move out of our rooms to be moved into other rooms. So we decided to go for a run together. And we went on this, you know, long run. It was very hilly because you're in the mountains of Massachusetts. We had a lot of time to talk. It was really sweet to kind of spend some time with her. And then we got back and we started in the teaching Yoga for Athletes aspect. So I moved into sort of put my teacher hat on. And it was awesome. I went in really expecting to learn how to teach better to the athletes, because I had already been doing that with CrossFitters and runners and triathletes. And I expected to learn, you know, different poses that would be really good for each of these athletes. But I came out with so much more than that. It really taught me to think differently in how I approach yoga and how I use it. So it's not, you know, just, you know, how to help recovery in runners, which we certainly got that, right? We certainly got, like, you know, really great poses to help with recovery, but just critical thinking skills and how to apply the tools of yoga in a smarter way and in ways I didn't even think of before. And so since that training, I've started to incorporate in the CrossFit that I teach a yoga warm-up. And most of the athletes have no idea it's yoga, but it sort of creates this awesome mobility for them, especially because a lot of them come in to class after having sat at their computer all day and sort of rolling the shoulders forward and, you know, driving and stress. And then they come in and then we're asking them to do overhead lifts, and we got to open up the shoulders first. So a lot of what I learned at Sage's teaching Yoga for Athletes was to think bigger, to think a lot bigger. And it really transformed the way that I taught and even how I approach yoga for myself. So I cannot say enough good things about this program. And if you're really looking forward to going to California for some reason, I can't think of a better reason than to go for these trainings. They're awesome.
So totally worth it. all your reservations are like, should I spend this money? Should I take this trip? Is this how I want to spend my time? You know, yes.
Yeah, 1,000% yes. Yes.
And I will tell, if people want more information, probably the easiest way to look, you can just look at the full catalog, is if people go to 1440.org, you can search for Sage's name, you can search for Fit Bottom Girls, or you can just kind of peruse their calendar. They have tons, like Nom Nom Paleo is doing something. Like, there's so many people that we've talked to for the podcast that are going to be there. It's going to be amazing. Also, Allison, I feel like maybe, not to totally put you on the spot, but if someone is going to, wants to incorporate a little bit of yoga into maybe their warm-up, or they want to start to use yoga as a warm-up before they do CrossFit or strength training or boot camp or whatever, do you have a couple of poses that are kind of like great go-tos?
Yes, please.
Yeah. So if you're looking for a warm up, the way I sort of approach it is, it depends on what you're trying to warm up for. If you're warming up for running, Sage actually, in one of her books, Everyday Yoga, has a really good sequence to warm you up for running that you can do. It's called parking lot yoga. And it's meant to do that because that's where we go, right? We go somewhere and then we like go for a run with our friends. And you don't always want to get on the ground. I mean, if you get run over by a car or your hands don't like the pavement so much or the grass is wet. And so it's a standing sequence that you can do that is specifically intended to warm up the muscles for running. So you're basically starting to send the message to your body of, these are the muscles I'm going to use. And so that you can sort of jump right into running and have that little bit of dynamic movement. And it also gets you breathing. It gets you breathing with your movement, which is what you need to do when you run. And when I look at it from the perspective of like CrossFit, when I'm putting together a warm up that goes with a specific WOD for the CrossFit classes that I teach, I look at what it is that we're asking the athletes to do. So if we're asking them to have the barbell over their head in an overhead position, then they need to have open shoulders and they need to turn the core on. So I think about, throughout the day, like I said, people are a lot of times sitting at their desk or they're sitting in their office, so they've got their phone in front of them, or they're, sitting at their car commuting to and from. And so the opposite effect is sort of happening all day. And so I look at the WOD and say, what do I need to get these people to do so that they can actually perform the movement? Because a lot of times our daily life isn't exactly providing the best patterning for our sport movements. So kind of undoing that would be what I would be going for when I'm looking at a CrossFit workout and how to create a warm up. So like taking a strap in your arms and your palms facing down, arms wide, and then taking it up and over your head. And it's called shoulder flossing. That stuff, warming up wrists is also really good. And like I use it a lot of times for the cool down afterwards too, especially if what I'm asking the athletes to do is have a very sort of rigid, strong braced spine and core. We do a lot of twists afterwards. And not only does that feel awesome, but it also gets people sort of ready for bed for those evening classes. They're not so jazzed up that they can't sleep when they get home. So it's just sort of, it depends on the sport. And you look at, like, for a warm up, you want to know, what do I need to turn on? What do I need to open up to accomplish the movements I'm about to ask my body to do? And then for a cool down, like, how do I get out of that mode and sort of let my body return to a state of balance?
Cool.
That's great. Oh my gosh. I'm glad you're on the show today.
Happy to be here.
I was like, we get two yogis for the price of one on this episode, right?
Exactly.
That's what I do.
Well, on that note, why don't we just sort of roll right into our interview with Sage Rowntree?
Sounds good.
Welcome back to the Fit Bottom Girls podcast. Today, our special guest is Sage Rowntree. She is an internationally recognized authority in yoga for athletes and the author of several books, including The Athlete's Guide to Yoga, Racing Wisely, and Everyday Yoga. She also contributes to Runner's World magazine and Yoga Journal. Sage's classes, training plans, videos, books, and articles make yoga, core strength, and endurance exercise accessible to everyone. Her goal is to help people find the right balance between work and rest for peak performance in sports and in life. Sage teaches workshops internationally and online at Core Strength for Real People, Yoga Vibes, and Sage Yoga Teacher Training. And we'll have all these links in the show notes, just so you know. She is here today to discuss how yoga can benefit athletes, especially for those who either think they don't need it or think they can't do it. And we're going to talk about her books and online courses. So welcome to the show, Sage Rowntree.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you. And today it's a very special day. It's myself. Well, I'm always here, Margo. And we have Kristen. And we actually have a special guest today. Her name is Allison, FBG Allison. It's your premiere performance on the podcast. So say hello.
It is, and I'm super excited. So hello. Thanks for having me on with you guys.
Absolutely. Sage, I'm going to ask you the first question, and then it'll be Kristen and then Allison. So Sage, with your writing, teaching, and training, you've basically created the perfect intersection of sports and yoga. So can you give a little background on what you drew you to both of these pursuits?
I came to them contemporaneously around the same time.
it was also a period where I had a really young baby at home, and getting out for a run was some of my only time to myself in the day, as was sneaking away to a yoga class. And I could see how the two were really complementary. So I had the good fortune of deepening my study of both at around the same time, and I've never really seen them as discrete, as independent of each other. The two practices of concerted sports training and yoga seemingly intertwined for me.
Wonderful. Now, you, in the intro, Margot mentioned you making yoga accessible to everybody, and it's funny because I literally was having lunch with a friend today, and that's how I described you, because your Yoga for Athletes book was a bit of a game changer for me. And I was really excited to see that you are a fellow 1440 Multiversity faculty member, and I think you have two different programs going on in June. And then ours is going to be later in the summer in August. So could you tell us a little bit about what we can expect in those programs?
The weekend is for athletes and everyone. You don't have to identify as athletic to enjoy the practices I teach. They are, I hope, as you say, super accessible. It's not athletic yoga. Instead, it's yoga for people who are tight and tired, and athletes definitely fall into that category, but so do plenty of other people. So the weekend is more about figuring out how yoga is the perfect complement to whatever else it is that you do in life, whether that's sitting on a bike, 400 miles, or just sitting at your desk all day. Then there's a teacher's intensive that goes for 5 days from Sunday to Friday. And Allie has done that intensive, so when she gets to ask a question, I hope we'll get to chat about that a little bit. And all of it's going to be in this amazing new campus that's just about finished in the Redwood Forest. And I see some pictures of trails that are really calling to me. So we'll definitely have plenty of outside time as well.
Awesome. Yeah. So, you know, Sage, you were saying that, you know, you came to yoga and athletics sort of at the same time. And so you've seen them sort of as being kind of very complementary throughout the time that they've been in part of your life. But a lot of people, that's not the case, right? I mean, a lot of them, like, they find their one sport and they sort of like cruise with it. And, you know, I have as a yoga teacher a hard time sometimes getting my athletes to believe that yoga is something that they should be doing. And there's a number of reasons for that. And we talked about those during training, but for the benefit of the audience, what is like the one thing that you wish every athlete knew about yoga?
That it doesn't have to be a workout. And if you are an athlete and you have only 10 hours in the week to dedicate to your training, why would you want to spend one or two of those on yoga? The style that I like to teach that I find most helpful is one that doesn't leave you in a sweaty puddle, that doesn't have a ton of push-ups in it, that isn't just stoking the competitive fire that people are already trying to fan throughout their workout week, but instead gives them a compliment. And it's really self-justifying once you have taken a few classes like that, where you feel the balance coming into your body, where you get an opportunity to be instead of do, where there's no goal of trying to achieve an Instagram-worthy yoga pose, or, you know, hold something for a particular amount of time, or do yet another chaturanga vinyasa, but instead just to feel good in your body. And once you see that, it's pretty easy to spend one of your training hours each week in this sweet practice.
So what is a common misconception that athletes give you when they're being skeptical, about yoga? What is the common feedback you get from them? They're like, nah, I'm not so sure. Why do they do that? What do you think it is?
Often they say, I'm not flexible, mm-hmm. So I can't come to yoga, but that's, that doesn't quite hold up to logic. And nor does your yoga practice have to be a practice about physical flexibility. For people who say they aren't flexible, they definitely need a practice of mental flexibility, and you sure get that in a yoga class, particularly if you do self-identify as a tighter person. It's a good way to sounds like a horrible pun, but to stretch your limits, to come to a class that you need to accept is not maybe playing to your strengths.
Yeah, that is so true. Now, talk to me about creating a home yoga practice, because I know you offer some really great options online, and as I already mentioned, your books are super helpful. So could you give us kind of a quick and dirty primer on maybe which of your offerings you recommend for whom at different stages of their practice?
Absolutely. So the first step, I always like for people to study with an experienced teacher just so that you can learn the vocabulary. it's like taking a knife skills class or, you know, like a basic home ec class before you go into the kitchen by yourself to make sure that you've got your food safety and your oven safety skills down. But once you've done that, I like my book Everyday Yoga, which I think of as a recipe book. And here comes an extended food analogy for you. Home practice is like home cooking, where you can really nourish yourself, you can play to your own tastes, you don't have to eat anything you don't like, whereas in a class, you know, you need to follow along for the most part with what's being served. In a class situation, at home you get to do what feels good for you. And the downside of that is sometimes we just eat chips right out of the bag and then move on to ice cream and don't get the healthy stuff that we need as the backbone of the practice. And that's where going back to a class and figuring out what's challenging for you and why, and ways that you can address your weaknesses with the yoga asana practice is really useful. But the home practice is a great opportunity to nourish yourself day in and day out, just like you wouldn't want to, or maybe you'd want to, but you wouldn't be best served to eat in restaurants every meal of the day. We all know that just from travel. It gets old pretty quickly. Same way, I wouldn't want you to only ever have yoga in a group experience or a private lesson. You really need to be able to feed yourself, and that's where the home practice is really useful.
Well, to that, kind of an extension of that, you know, a lot of athletes in particular will make their way either into yoga or, you know, get gung-ho about trying this whole yoga thing at home when they're injured. And so what is the advice both, you know, for athletes and then the teachers that you train on how to approach yoga, a yoga practice under those circumstances?
Right. So often the athletes I see in my Yoga for Athletes class come in expressly because they were hurt and they can't get their usual endorphin fix in the workout. So they figure it's time to give yoga a try. And yoga can certainly help to increase your ability to withstand stresses on your body and therefore provide injury prevention. But it's not, a group class is not necessarily the best place depending on the personal injury. So it's tough to make a blanket statement about ways to cope with injury, but in general, if you find yourself in a hole, the first thing is to stop digging. So you've got to figure out, why did this injury happen? And sometimes you know it happened because you crashed your bike or you sprained your ankle, in which case it's a lot easier to come up with this sequence that avoids those areas completely. But a lot of times the injury is more vague in its origin and there wasn't any precipitating incident that you can put your finger on. Instead, your body has accumulated an imbalance and that has led to the injury. And practice wisely, yoga can really help you bring your body into better balance so that you don't have those imbalances that lead to injury. But it's real tough to say in a broad way what's right. That said, for teachers, less is often more, and virtually anybody in any state could do a restorative practice, could even do a gentle yoga practice, being mindful of staying away from any acute injuries or any pain. And those practices are so good for injury recovery because they address the nervous system. So without specifically being a physical therapy practice, a corrective exercise practice, yoga gives us these amazing tools to relax and to begin to regenerate and recover.
Sure. So cycling season is coming up for me. Yay. And I just wanted to ask you, you know, I'm going to be a little greedy and just get some advice from you personally. So what are the best yoga poses for cyclists and our notoriously tight hamstrings?
Right. Well, think about the position that the bike holds you in. So you're going to need to balance that position of hip flexion, shoulder flexion, spinal flexion with some extension exercises. The first thing that I would tell you to do is to relax, which is nice. This is good news, Margot, is to relax in some supported back bends, like a supported fish pose where you use a rolled up towel or yoga mat or foam roller up the length of your spine, arms draped off to the side so that your chest can stretch, and also in a supported bridge pose where you use that same foam roller, or better yet, a solid object like a yoga block underneath your pelvis so your hip flexors can relax. And once you've got them open, then you flip over onto your belly and do the equivalent of tummy time for a little infant. But try to lift your body up off the floor without using your hands much to develop some strength in the back, because your back muscles are held in a long and mostly relaxed position all the time that you're in the saddle.
Good. Thank you.
Awesome. Now, Sage, I want to give you a chance to brag just a little bit here because you are way beyond accomplished as an athlete, teacher, speaker, coach, author, business owner. So I have to ask, like, what is it that you are most proud of?
Oh, boy.
And you can go top three if you need to. Three deep seems fair. But I've got to know because I was reading your bio and I was just like, dang.
Wow. Gee, you think I would have some top of mind. My athletic achievement I'm most proud of, I think, is requalifying for the Boston Marathon in the Boston Marathon. Because just getting there was awesome, but running a really smart race there felt so good. And it was such a good day that I could never go back. Because I kept signing up and deferring and signing up and deferring. And then I realized that just was a peak experience. And I don't want to muddy it with any other ideas. Anything else like that. So that's a peak athletic accomplishment. Let's see. Well, the first book is always the biggest book, isn't it? So that was very exciting. And my businesses are just so much fun for me. And the secret there is having a really wonderful partner, a really wonderful business partner. And of course, my husband is also pretty great. And with their support, I have a lot more fun experimenting, coming up with new things. I like to say that partnership halves the work and doubles the fun. But really, it about triples the fun to have a good partner.
I would totally agree. And Jen isn't even here to listen to me say that, so you guys know it's true.
Let her know. Speaking of your babies, I know you have a new book coming out soon, Lifelong Yoga, and that's geared towards athletes as they age. So just sort of give us a little bit of the lay of the land there. So what are some of the biggest shifts or changes that occur for athletes as we age, and how does yoga sort of help navigate that process?
And that's another thing that I did in partnership with my mentee. Protege sounds kind of sexist. I think I'm protecting her. So I'll say my mentee, Alexandra DeCiato. And she teaches a yoga for healthy aging class that was the germ of this book. It began as yoga for aging athletes, but we decided nobody wanted to self-identify as aging.
Fair.
So we're calling it lifelong yoga. And it's yoga to keep you active through the years. The number one tip is to find balance, to find the right balance. And balance is always a moving target, but particularly as we age into our 40s, 50s, beyond, the amount of rest that we need to take in order to adapt to our workouts increases. And that's why a master's athlete might be doing only 2 or 3 hard workouts in a week when she might have been able to carry 4 or 5 when she was younger. So it's about finding that balance between work and rest, about continuing to maintain or even build your sense of balance and space, because falls become an issue, and of course recovery takes a lot longer as we age. And finding the right balance of activity and inactivity, of trying to hold on to the gains that you've created in your body, and to slow the eventual effects of aging.
So, Sage, I have a very good friend who's a huge fan of the podcast, and she was so excited when I told her we were speaking to you this week, and she just became a certified yoga instructor. Her name is Mariette, and she wanted me to ask you, what is your best advice for newbie instructors?
Teach in as many different situations as you can, because your students are your biggest teachers, and the more challenge you can create for yourself so that you have to adapt as a teacher, the better. I mean, it's just exactly the same advice as, like, how would you get better at running? Well, you need to challenge yourself to get better at running. So don't just do the class that you're most comfortable and familiar with. Say yes to a lot of different opportunities. Teach the running group when they come back from their long run at your local running store. Teach when your daughter's classroom wants you to come in and do a breathing practice for 7-year-olds. Say yes to those opportunities, and you hone your skills a lot faster than if you're always just working within the confines of the studio you were trained in or your local Y. Saying yes to lots of different opportunities will force you to get better really quick.
I love that. Mm-hmm. And okay, I'm going to take a little departure here because I'm kind of a literature nerd, and I didn't realize until I started prepping for this interview that in addition to all the accomplishments I listed before, you also hold a PhD in English literature.
That's true.
Yeah, right? I mean,
also, I'm 6 foot tall, weigh 110 pounds, have long curly blonde hair, pretty white teeth, and drive a Tesla.
I mean, there's, it's no wonder I'm fangirling over here a little bit, right? But okay, so with that in mind, what's on your must-read list? And you can give a couple, you can go classic, you can go modern, whatever you like, but what do I need to read?
Well, are you talking literature? Are you talking training books? Are you talking yoga books?
Oh, I'm talking literature. I mean, you can totally give other suggestions as well, but just with a PhD English lit background, that's what I want to know. I'm all about the fiction.
I think you should read whatever makes you happy. And I came to that conclusion toward the end of my graduate work when I was looking at all of the books on the shelf, you know, all these books I had held in my hands for so long, and all of these books that I had to force myself to go through and pack them up, and you know, made a promise to myself, I'm never going to finish a book just because I started it ever again. I have to like
smart.
It. Life is
too short.
You've got to like it.
Yeah.
It's your only life. Why spend an hour of it, you know, out of obligation doing something that is supposed to be fun? If it feels like obligation, no, you should really be enjoying it. So please, read whatever makes you happy. I just got off a binge of reading Tana French's Dublin Murder Squad series, which is just wonderful. If you like crime fiction, detective fiction, but also literary fiction, I totally love her books. They're awesome. I love Leanne Moriarty. Big Little Lies just aired on HBO.
Oh, my gosh.
So these are light reads. They're not like, oh, literature. I like to read literature as well, but I like to read things that make me happy. So this have been two series that I've really liked a lot, two authors I've really liked a lot.
Thank you.
Let me also, while we're talking about training books, if you had said, tell me what I should read in terms of training, yes. I really recommend about anything that Matt Fitzgerald writes. Have you guys talked to Matt? Yeah, Matt's just wonderful. He's such a good writer. He's got such a quick intellect, and he writes both on nutrition, sports nutrition, endurance nutrition, and also on the role of the brain in endurance sports. And it's really easy to read, very, very interesting, and I recommend that to anyone who's interested in like the physiology and psychology of training and food.
So I'm going to sort of turn 180 here and come back to sort of where Margo was at the beginning and get a little bit selfish on you. So I'm neck deep in miles, training miles, working up to my next run. And I know that you own a spa and that you are sort of the expert, or at least you were whenever I ran into you at the training, on the different types of massage and recovery stuff that I could do as part of my training. So knowing that I'm logging a ton of miles, if I really wanted to, like, indulge in self-care, what would you say, what would you suggest?
Well, what's your budget?
Oh.
Unlimited.
Well, so let's say that I'm trying to keep it under $300.
I, for $300, would think about one or two super relaxing treatments, because I love to go to the spa. There's something about being out of the house that automatically makes it way more relaxing, and having a robe and having a little bit of heat, sauna, steam room. I love them. You know, we could argue about whether physiologically they make a big difference, but psychologically I find them to really set the mood. And then sometimes I feel, now it totally depends on the type of massage that you're getting, also the type of massage that you like, and exactly how close you are to your next ultra. But sometimes I find that a facial is more relaxing than a massage.
If
the goal is just to get relaxed and to let your parasympathetic nervous system take over, you aren't enduring a facial, except maybe during the extractions portion, and you can always ask to skip that. You get all these different cool smells and textures and different levels of touch, your face, your hands, your scalp, if you're lucky, your feet. But it's not like the therapist is railing on your sore spots. And I find that is super relaxing. Like one year I went out and ran the Big Sur Marathon as part of a program that Runner's World was doing, where we gave some presentations and we went and ran the race together with readers, and that was a ton of fun. And I remember the afternoon before the marathon, I went to the spa at the resort we were staying and had a facial, like expressly. I didn't want anybody giving me a massage when I was about to run 26 miles.
Sure.
I just wanted to chill out. And I think that's a good way to spend your money if you have a budget. No, in the $300 range. But of course, just lying around at home is free. And underrated, you know, find something that you like to watch on your streaming service, put your feet up on the back of the couch, and that doesn't cost anything but your monthly subscription to the screen, to the streaming service. Yeah. In between $0 and $300 is, you know, something in the $20 to $50 range. If you could find a restorative yoga class that somebody else is teaching, that is so relaxing. Yeah. Just to have somebody tuck you into the restorative yoga poses, to know somebody else is timing the poses, can be really restorative. Remember the 1 year I taught a restorative yoga class the day before I ran the New York City Marathon. Yeah. I wish I could have taken it. The students were so sweet and wrote me and said, oh, I felt so grounded and relaxed, and I was really able to focus on my breath during the race. And I was thinking, great, I just spent 3 hours like standing up, squatting down, tucking you in, moving things around for you. I probably should have been.
Other people.
Yeah, I probably should have been doing that myself. But that doesn't cost that much, and it is nice if you can get yourself to a class for it. Now, you'll notice I haven't said spend a bunch of money on a self-massage device. I think that self-massage is really cool. I think you can probably do it with stuff that you got around the house. And I think that the downside of self-massage, of trying to find and release trigger points in your body using your hands or a rolling pin or a lacrosse ball or, God forbid, a golf ball, is that when you find a sore spot, the tendency of the athlete is to be like, oh, I'm going to get you a sore spot, and to aggravate it further and actually compound the issue instead of removing the issue. So I'd rather tell you to find a good show on Netflix than to rail on yourself with massage balls.
That is fantastic advice.
Yeah, hard because we're used to making things happen as athletes and type A women, and that's not what you need to do, particularly in the taper before the race. You just have to have faith and patience and try to stay as calm as possible. And it's really tough to let things happen, but that's why we do a yoga practice to complement our training, so that we have practice in Shavasana at the end of every class of just being still and not trying to accomplish anything at all.
So I guess I'm going to ask you the last question for this interview. It's been very entertaining and informative. So, you know, thank you so much for being on our show. Sage, I have one more question for you. What was the last song you listened to before you did this podcast interview?
Oh, my gosh.
I know.
That I listened to, like, on purpose or
it could be anything. Anything. Up to you.
Oh, boy. I don't know, probably both by Gucci Mane and Drake.
Ooh. Oh.
Excellent.
Okay.
I love it.
That is a great answer. So thank you so much for being on the show, Sage. You were a great guest.
Thanks for having me, ladies. That was a fun conversation.
That's it for this episode of the Fit Bottom Girls podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. And if you like what you're hearing, feel free to subscribe to us on whatever platform you use to listen to podcasts. And if you love what you're hearing, yay, leave a few stars and review. That would be amazing. Be sure to follow us on all of our social media channels for Fit Bottom Girls, Fit Bottom Zen, Fit Bottom Eats, and Fit Bottom Mamas. You just spell it all out and you will find us. Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat, Pinterest, Instagram. Believe me, you will find us. If you want to reach out to say hi, have a question about a recent episode or interview, feel free to email us at podcast@fitbottomgirls.com. And if books and movies are also your thing, check out the other podcast I co-host called Book vs. Movie, which you can find anywhere where you search for podcasts. Thank you so much once again for dropping by. And remember, a life filled with laughter is a life well lived. Bye.